In October of 1957, a Brazilian farmer named Antonio Vilas Boas had an experience that's now considered the first documented UFO abduction case in the post-war era. 4 months after the unusual events, Vilas Boas shared his experience with a doctor and a journalist. At a time when stories of UFO landings and entity encounters were dismissed out of hand, Antonio's experience was widely overlooked at first. But more than 60 years later, we see that his narrative contains many of the same elements as the common alien abduction experiences of the 80s and the 90s, and it was the first to suggest a rather alarming agenda on the part of the abductors. Antonio Vilas Boas was a 23-year-old Brazilian man living with his family on their farm near the town of São Francisco de Sales in the southeastern state of Minas Gerais. After 11 p.m. on the night of October 5th, 1957, Antonio was trying to sleep in his room with his brother João when he went to open the window. In the middle of the farmyard, he noticed a fluorescent silver light illuminating a large patch of ground with no visible source. Later, the light began moving towards him. He swung the shutters closed, waking João, and the brothers watched as the light shone through the shutters, then down between the roof tiles, before it simply went out. The second event took place after 9:30 p.m. on the night of October 14th. Antonio was plowing the field in the tractor with his other brother when they saw a large round light that shone so bright it hurt their eyes. It was light red in color and hovering at the northern end of the field an estimated 100 meters in the air, lighting up the ground below. Antonio felt that there was an object behind the light, but when he walked closer, the light quickly moved to the southern end of the field. Antonio tried approaching it 20 times, but it kept switching locations. For the next while, it occasionally shot out rays in all directions, then appeared to vanish, as though it had been turned out, as Antonio put it. The next night, October 15th, Antonio was plowing alone. At 1 a.m., he spotted a red star in the clear sky that was quickly growing in size as it appeared to fly towards him. Soon he could see that it was shaped like an elongated egg and emitting a brilliant pale red light. The object stopped over top of Antonio's tractor, then descended to a height of roughly 50 meters. The area was lit as though it were daylight, with a powerful pale red glow. The UFO then moved 10 to 15 meters in front of the tractor and slowly descended. Vilas Boas could now see that the egg-shaped machine was surrounded by small purple-colored lights and had a small square-shaped metal plane sticking out of either side. It also had three metal spikes protruding from the front, aligned horizontally. Above each of the two outer spikes was a round reddish light, and above the central one was a powerful red headlight, as he put it, that appeared to be the source of the brilliant glow he'd seen before. The upper part of the craft was shaped like a shallow dome, and it spun on its own axis. This spinning dome gave off a powerful red fluorescent light, which changed to a green color when the craft came to land and the spinning slowed. A tripod of metal supports came out from beneath the object before it landed on the ground, prompting Vilas Boas to drive his tractor away, but he only got a few meters before the engine died and the lights went out. Vilas Boas had just started running when someone grabbed his arm from the side. His assailant was completely covered in a suit and helmet, and stood about as tall as Antonio's shoulder. As he struggled away, he was grabbed by three more taller figures in the same full-body suits, who lifted him off the ground. Vilas Boas struggled and yelled, and curiously, each time that he spoke, the four assailants stopped to look at his face. The suited entities were each clothed in tight-fitting full-body jumpsuits made of thick gray cloth with a few black bands around the limbs. The suit joined a helmet of the same color, which revealed their light bluish eyes only through two round holes. Their helmets seemed overly large above the eyeline. Three silver-colored tubes the size of garden hoses came from the bottom of the back of their helmets and curved down to fit into the back of the suit. In the center of the chest was a small round red shield that reflected light, and a strip of silvery material joined the shield to a tight, broad belt with no clasp or buckle. The sleeves blended into thick, five-fingered gloves of the same color, and the pants joined seamlessly to tennis-style shoes with soles that were 2 or 3 inches thick, and curved upwards at the toes. Velas Boas was carried to the craft, which was sitting roughly 2 meters above the ground. There was an open doorway towards the rear of the craft, with the door laying outward horizontally, like a castle drawbridge. There was a ladder hanging from the end of this drawbridge door, which appeared to be made of the same silvery metal as the craft's walls. The assailants forced Antonio onto the ladder, and he realized that it was somehow flexible, and swung from side to side as he struggled. Taken inside the UFO, Antonio found himself inside a small square room made entirely of polished metal. At the top of the walls and in the ceiling were many small square lights set into the surface. The assailant set Antonio down as the door raised up and closed, blending so seamlessly with the walls around it that the frame could not be seen at all. There were 5 of the beings around him at this point, and one used a hand to signal Antonio to move to an open door opposite the entrance. Antonio entered into a much larger, semi-oval-shaped room, with the same polished metal walls and lighting, and a column in the center. To one side of the room, Antonio saw an oddly shaped table surrounded by chairs like bar stools, all made of white metal. Antonio stood waiting while the 5 entities appeared to speak to each other in what he described as slow barks and yelps. The barking stopped, and the assailants all grabbed him and started taking off his clothes. One of them then approached him with a soft, wet sponge, which it used to cover him in a thick, clear liquid that dried quickly and wasn't oily. 3 of his assailants led him through a door opposite to where they had entered, by pushing something in the middle, which caused it to open inwards in 2 halves. Above the door were illuminated red symbols, which appeared to float about 2 inches in front of the doorframe. Velas Boas walked through the door into a squarish room, and once again, the door closed seamlessly with the wall around it. Shortly after, 2 more of the beings entered, each carrying a thick red tube with a glass flask shaped like a chalice on one end, and a kind of cupping glass on the other. One of the entities squeezed the tube, seemingly pressing the air out of it, before he placed the cupping glass on Antonio's chin. Antonio felt a bit of suction while the flask filled halfway with what looked to be blood. The second tube was placed on the other side of his chin, and the chalice was filled to the brim. The entities then left with the door closing behind them. In the 2 spots where the tubes touched his chin, there appeared a dark mark that itched and burned, and was still visible 4 months later. Antonio was then left alone in a room that contained a strangely shaped large gray couch or bed. He eventually began to notice a smell that he compared to burning painted cloth, and found that there were several metallic rods protruding from the walls, with many small holes in them emitting a gray smoke into the air. Antonio quickly became nauseous, and threw up in a corner of the room. After a long wait, Antonio was startled by a noise, and he looked to see a naked woman in the open doorway. Antonio described her as being more beautiful than any woman he had seen before, but unusual in several ways. She had white skin like a blonde Brazilian woman, and her hair was bleach blonde and straight, though it curled inwards at the end. The woman's underarm and pubic hair were blood red, and her arms were covered in freckles. She had big, elongated blue eyes that narrowed to fine points on the outsides, and slanted downwards toward the middle. She had high cheekbones, a wide face, and a pointed chin, a slender body and a small waist, but wide hips and large thighs. Finally, she had small feet, with long and narrow hands. Antonio estimated that the helmet would have brought her up to his chin, making him certain that this woman was the first assailant to grab him outside. The woman suddenly embraced Velas Boas, rubbing her head against his face as he became more aroused than he'd ever been before. As the two had sexual intercourse, the woman grunted a few times, which made Antonio feel as though she were more animal than human. After he'd finished inside of her, the door opened again, and one of the suited figures appeared and called to the woman. Before leaving, she turned to face Antonio, pointed to her belly, pointed at him, then pointed up to the sky with a slight smile on her face. Next, one of the beings returned Antonio's clothes and led him back to the oval room, where the being joined three other crew members now sitting on the stools. There was a third doorway in the room that was slightly ajar, and in the room beyond, Antonio could hear noises like a person shuffling around. He also noticed that on the table was a square box with a glass lid, protecting what appeared to be a clock face. Like a clock, it had a hand, and black marks at the 3, 6, and 9 o'clock positions, and four little marks in a row at 12. Antonio saw one of the entities glance at this object a few times, but he never saw the hand move. When Antonio grabbed the device off the table, the nearest being darted over and snatched it from him, placing it back on the table. Eventually, one of the entities got up and signaled for Antonio to follow him. The pair walked through the room they'd originally entered from, and out the exterior door, then along the catwalk that wrapped around the craft. There were reddish square lamps embedded along the hall, where Velas Boas saw purple ones before. The entity pointed out the three metal spikes at the front of the craft. At this time, they were glowing a pale red. The catwalk stopped ahead of a large, thick sheet of murky glass that appeared to be a windshield. The crew member pointed up to the top of the craft where the big disc was slowly rotating, now illuminated by a greenish fluorescent light, and Velas Boas could hear a whining sound like a vacuum cleaner. The pair returned to the entrance, and the crew member gestured for Antonio to descend the ladder. Back on the ground, he saw the entity point at himself, point to the ground, then point at the southern sky, before signaling Antonio to step back. The entity went into the craft before the door closed, and the ladder's rungs collapsed together and disappeared into the wall. The legs folded into the UFO as it rose, and the top spun faster, changing between several different colors before becoming a vibrant red. A loud hum or whine could be heard as the craft quickly changed orientation, then flew southward at a fantastic speed. Velas Boas thought he saw a rudder move when it turned. After the craft flew off, Velas Boas returned to his tractor and found that the battery was disconnected. It was now just before dawn, and he estimated that he was on the craft from 1:15 to 5:30 a.m. He felt weak and tired, and slept until 4:30 that afternoon, at which point he felt well enough to eat dinner. But the following nights, his dreams replayed the disturbing events and shocked him awake. He also experienced nausea, headaches, and loss of appetite. The second night, he felt a burning sensation in his eyes, which grew worse the next day. For the next month, he felt excessively sleepy, even drifting off during the day. The day after his abduction ended, Antonio returned to the landing site and measured the lengths between the three indentations left in the ground. From this, he was able to determine that the craft was around 10.6 meters, or 35 feet long, and 7 meters, or 23 feet wide at the rear. 8 days after the incident, Antonio bumped his forearm, resulting in a bruise and bleeding, which became infected and itchy, and left a purple patch around it when it healed. In the following 10 days, Antonio found similar wounds appear spontaneously on his forearms and legs, each of which left behind a purple patch that remained for months. 15 days after the incident, a pale yellow spot appeared on each side of his nose. In November 1957, Velas Boas read João Martins' article on Brazilian UFOs in the weekly magazine, O Cruzeiro. He wrote two letters to Martins and sent a wood model of the UFO that he'd carved. A little over 4 months after the incident, on February 22, 1958, Felis Boas met with Martins and physician and ufologist Dr. Olavo T. Fontes in Rio de Janeiro. Martins and Fontes recorded over 4 hours of cross-examination, and Dr. Fontes also conducted a medical evaluation, but he could not explain the two small hypochromic patches on his chin, or the purple patches around his wounds. Years later, Dr. Fontes said he felt that the symptoms were due to radiation poisoning. However, their meeting was too late to conduct blood tests to confirm this. Sometime ahead of their February meeting, Felis Boas had sketched a reproduction of the unusual red lettering above the doorway and included it in a letter to Martins. Years later, a Brazilian doctor named Walter Bueller sent a copy to linguist and ufologist Gordon Creighton, but it's unknown how Bueller obtained the sketch, and it's impossible to determine if it's the original. At some point in this visit, Antonio also sketched a drawing of the UFO. After the interrogation, Martin said that he wouldn't be able to publish the story in O Cruzeiro due to lack of evidence and lack of similar accounts. In the end, Fontes believed Felis Boas' story, while Martins didn't. Creighton felt that Fontes and Martins had made some agreement to not publish the story at the behest of some US or Brazilian security or intelligence service. In July 1961, Bueller and Dr. Mario Prudente Aquino traveled to São Francisco de Sales and had Felis Boas draw two more sketches of the craft. Bueller used the testimony to write about the case in his personal bulletin and shared it with the Brazilian Society for the Study of Flying Saucers, as well as the Flying Saucer Review, which declined to publish on the case. However, Gordon Creighton wrote a series of articles for Flying Saucer Review beginning in 1965. Around the same time, the case was covered in O Cruzeiro. Creighton eventually compiled all the information for a chapter in The Humanoids, published in 1969. Felis Boas had a lasting fear that the woman's gestures meant that he would be captured again and taken to the being's home. But he was calmed by Dr. Fontes' suggestion that it meant that she was going to bear his child where she lived. Antonio married within a few years of the incident and had several children, and he eventually became a lawyer. He refused all further interviews until he agreed to appear on Brazilian television in 1978 to correct several inaccurate retellings. Otherwise, he hadn't discussed his experience in detail, not even with family. He maintained the veracity of his account until his death on January 17, 1991. The story of Felis Boas was largely disbelieved in its own time. But after the Betty and Barney Hill case of 1961 brought the phenomenon of alien abduction to popular attention, it was clear that his case was a forerunner. Just as in the case of Felis Boas, Betty and Barney Hill saw a UFO before being apprehended by alien beings and led aboard a landed craft. Pregnancy was a theme in both accounts, with Betty being tested for it. And many more abductees or experiencers have reported sexual intercourse with apparently alien beings, or alien-human hybrids. Hybrid reproduction was a common theme in stories collected by abduction researchers in the 1980s and 90s, including John Mack, Bud Hopkins, and David Jacobs. And many experiencers today claim to have reproductive sex with extraterrestrial or interdimensional entities. However, other ufologists such as Jacques Vallée have criticized the heavy use of regressive hypnosis in these cases, and warned that Hopkins and others might have unintentionally implanted false memories in their subjects. Furthermore, sex with spirits, gods, demons, and other beings is a notable feature of most ancient religions and traditional mythologies. For example, in his 2016 book, The Supernatural, co-authored by Whitley Strieber, Professor Jeffrey Kripal shares stories from the tantric yoga tradition in India that are eerily reminiscent of Western abduction stories. These include bodies of light and flying temples or royal airships, containing female beings who abduct and sexualize their victims, awakening them on a spiritual level. Several Christian thinkers in medieval Europe believed that humans could breed with demons, and some Muslim scholars believed the same thing about jinn, a kind of invisible, spirit-like race of beings that lived alongside of humans. In February 1978, ufologist Rich Reynolds was approached by Bosco Nedeljkovic, who had formerly worked for the CIA and Department of Defense, and worked in Brazil for the U.S. Agency for International Development at the time of the incident. Nedeljkovic claimed that the Vilas Boas abduction was perpetrated by U.S. intelligence as part of Project MK-Ultra, and said that he witnessed parts of the operation from a U.S. Army-owned helicopter, including the spraying of Vilas Boas with lorazepam gas at the start of the abduction. From declassified MK-Ultra documents, we know that the CIA did use drugs on unsuspecting targets, and some ufologists, including Helmut and Marion Lammer, have documented evidence of military abductions which simulate aspects of entity abductions. However, Nedeljkovic offered no proof of his claims, and it's been demonstrated that several times in the past, CIA and other US federal officers have deliberately tried to discredit UFO researchers by planting false claims. In 2006, 9 pages of documents were published on the UFO Reality blog, which detailed Reynolds' discussion with Nedeljkovic. In his tell-all report on UFOs in 1956, Captain Edward Ruppelt of the U.S. Air Force said that at the time, all reports of UFO landings in contact with entities were automatically marked CP for crackpot. Vilas Boas's report was thus largely disbelieved in its own time, but it helped pave the way for the public's acceptance of the Betty and Barney Hill abduction in 1961. The story that Vilas Boas told was in many ways an early example of the kinds of abduction narratives seen in the later 20th century, and was the first to present the world with the shocking implication that some of these alien or extra-dimensional beings might be breeding with the human race. Help support quality videos on anomalous phenomena. Pledge a monthly donation to Think Anomalous on Patreon, or donate by PayPal or Buy Me a Coffee. Think Anomalous is created by Jason Charbonneau. Research by Clark Murphy. Music by Josh Chamberlain.